You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Christopher Lucas is worried about his future. Five members of his family, including his mother, his grandmother, and his brother, succumbed to depression and eventually committed suicide. And that leaves Mr. Lucas wondering, will I end up killing myself too? The award-winning TV writer, producer, and director has chronicled his family's history of mental illness in his latest book, Blue Jeans, a memoir of loss and survival. It's published by Doubleday. I'm very pleased that it brings Christopher Lucas back to the show today. Hi.
How you doing?
You're not a kid anymore, so are you still worried? Haven't you got past the point where that might be a major concern?
Normally, I would say yes, but my wife died 5-6 months ago, and to me, that turned out to be the most horrific thing that happened to me. It surpassed the suicides. And even though I had gotten over the idea that I might kill myself, in writing this book and in thinking about my own cancer last year, it had to come up again.
Well, there's been a lot of tragedy in your family. Have you researched how much depression is genetic?
Well, I had lunch just the other day with a cousin of mine who's a pathologist and who has done a lot of thinking about our family. And we agreed that we knew nothing about the family before my grandmother and my father, that it was an empty shell, and we have no idea. But my own feeling is that certainly the bipolar disorder is genetic, and that probably depression, too.
So you think that it's the bipolar thing that has run in the family?
Bipolar
has. And the depression part of bipolar has been the major problem.
There have been two strains. One strain is the bipolar, the other is depression. Now, how much single polar, let's call it that, single pole. Straight depression can come out of bipolar. I don't know, but I know that everyone in my family has had one or the other.
But for example, your older brother, Anthony Lucas, who was a guest on this show a couple of times. He was an incredibly successful writer, won 2 Pulitzers, wrote for the New York Times. And people ask, why would anyone who had so much to live for kill himself?
Right. Tony was not bipolar. Tony showed none of the manic propensities. But both Tony and I suffered the suicide of our mother at a very early age, and that trauma matches the depression of many people. If you add in the genetic component, you're talking about a person who might be successful in the eyes of others, but not in his own eyes.
And you say he never really felt like a success, that he felt like a fraud. Now, that is not uncommon with successful people.
Yeah. And look at me. I'm 73 years old. I've published 5 books. I've won Emmys. And many times I think I'm a fraud, too.
Do you have to do things to keep yourself from falling into that same dark hole that Tony fell into?
Yeah, all the time. But there was a wonderful story I heard the other day on, my gosh, it might have been this station, a psychologist who said that he was often asked, what do you tell children about the towers that fell? And he said, you tell them that wasn't the end of the story. And so I'm telling myself, this is not the end of my life. This is not the end of my story. Let's wait and see where I go. That gets me up in the morning. The fact that there might be a tomorrow that is better than yesterday or 40 years ago gets me up. Then having a wife like I had who said to me all the time, how do you get up in the morning? I had to prove to her that I could still do it.
Your mother was severely depressed during Tony's infancy and parts of your early childhood. How much of an impact do you think that had on you and your brother?
Well, I know it had more of an impact on Tony than it did on me.
Because he was more of a witness.
He was more of a witness. She tried to kill herself only a few months after he was born. And she writes in these remarkable letters that she left behind, and some of which I've included in the book, that when they brought him to her, she could not feel anything for him. Now, if you can't feel anything for your child, then your child stops feeling. And I think that had that tremendous blow to him that he could never recover from.
And how old was he, you, and your mother when she killed herself?
She was 33. Tony was 8. I was 6.
So did you have any idea that your mother was suffering from mental illness?
No, and for 10 years, no one told me that she had suffered from anything other than perhaps pneumonia or something. But I do have a memory, Leonard. I have a memory of April Fool's Day, perhaps the year before, sitting in the dining room and watching my mother, unable to respond to the antics of my brother and myself on April Fool's Day. And I've remembered that my whole life as a sign of how depressed she must have been at that point.
Well, your father obviously knew. Your mother had been hospitalized, and also she acted out in that way. But he didn't tell you right away about what happened. Was he just trying to protect you?
Oh, I think he was trying to protect us. I was just having a conversation with one of your associates in the green room here who said that the grandfather of someone she knew killed himself, and the parents never told the kids. And did I think that was good or bad? And I said, I think it's a rotten idea, because I think that family secrets, whether they're of suicide or of any other terrible event, permeate the family.
And eventually the kid's going to find out. And actually that permeation, that secret, the kid is aware of the fact that something is being hidden, and that makes it even more powerful, don't you think?
Oh, not only makes it more powerful, but made me feel guilty that I had done something terrible because they wouldn't tell me what was going on. How do you know? Well, you know, kids have really big ears, and they have big sensibilities. They know something.
Well, you say that she may also have suffered from postpartum depression.
Yeah.
That's your fault, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. No, it's my brother's fault. It's impossible to know, but if you add in the fact that it was shortly after Tony's birth that she became that depressed enough to try and kill herself, it's almost certain that she had that.
Well, how much did people even – first of all, there was no phrase bipolar then. I'm not even sure people were called manic depressive at that point.
They were. They were. But the treatment for manic depressives was about the same as treatment for schizophrenia. You put them away. You might give them shock treatment if you had it. In those days, they had insulin shock treatment, which is a terrible thing to do to any human being. And then you take away all the objects they might kill themselves with, period.
If she had lived today, she would have had certain medicines that might have at least stabilized her.
Yeah. And in fact, my uncle, her brother, 2 years her junior, was also diagnosed. But he was diagnosed at a time when lithium and electroconvulsive therapy were available. He lived into his 70s. He then killed himself, but my guess is the medication had just stopped being effective.
Well, that's one of the problems with medication for this condition, that it'll be effective and then stop being effective.
Well, I'm on medication for my depression, which someone was kind enough to suggest at one point must have been less than my brother's, because I haven't killed myself. I think there are other reasons. But he was on medication, and it should have been upped. And it should have been upped at that point when writers finish a book.
My guess is Christopher Lucas, whose most recent book, something that he did finish and now has to work through, is called Blue Jeans. It is published by Doubleday. So after your mother killed herself, your grandmother took over most of the child rearing. What was your father doing?
My father got tuberculosis, which was cured, but it took him away from us for 6 months. He lost a tremendous amount of weight, and it was due to the stress he had been under.
And then he drank heavily. You think he was self-medicating?
He self-medicated before he met my mother, and he self-medicated for the rest of his life, and the drink killed him. And he did not know how to take care of two small boys. He had no idea.
Now, your grandmother ended up killing herself as well. How old were you when that happened?
Yeah, that's a little less sure. And there was an empty bottle of sleeping pills next to her bed in the hospital. She died when, 1969 or 70, so I was 35. At that point, the idea of people in my family killing themselves had become almost banal, a horrible thing to say. And the fact that I detested my grandmother at that point made me guilty for many years afterwards that I couldn't feel sympathy for a woman who had discovered her own daughter with a slit throat. I mean, that's a terrible thing to discover.
So when you take – there's a big difference between committing suicide by taking pills and cutting your own throat.
Yeah, you have to be very, very, very depressed to cut your throat or cut your wrist, as my mother did both, apparently. My grandmother simply had lived to 83, and for 10 years had said she was too old.
Part of the problem you seem to be circling around is that the survivors have a lot of guilt themselves. And did I do something wrong? Or is there something I could have done that could have stopped the suicide?
I discussed this at some length with my cousin just the other day because he was rather shocked that I had felt that I was not able to save my wife from dying. Now, she died from a heart attack. So it was sudden. It was 7 in the morning, and suddenly she was dead. And
Can you ever prevent anybody from dying
from
a heart attack?
But what I'm getting at is the
The mindset is there.
The propensity of the human being to feel guilt is very, very strong, Leonard, even where there is no possibility. Now take suicide. Well, did I shout at my brother yesterday? Did I not call him? Did I see my mother and not smile? Guilt is easy to come by.
Or did he say, you know, I'm going to kill myself, and I just thought that he was talking off the top of his head?
Well, as you know, because we did this show together 25 years ago when I wrote Silent Grief, my first book on survivors, it is very easy to blame yourself, and it is very easy to ignore the person who says he or she is going to kill themselves. Take it seriously, but do not blame yourself if it happens, because that wasn't your fault.
But what happens when somebody seems to be joking about committing suicide, then later you discover they committed it? Or, well, first of all, when they joke about it, or if they say it seriously, you think, well, you know, he's really depressed right now, but I don't think that he's going to commit suicide. Is there something you can do?
Sure. You can say, as I said to my brother one night when he was terribly depressed, I said, listen, if you don't go see a psychopharmacologist and get on medication or a psychiatrist, I'm going to take you to the hospital right now. If they're just joking, or if they're serious but now you've called them on it, they may say to you, thank you. They may say, the hell with you. But you have made the effort to get to them and make them feel that they are worth something.
Once when I was doing a midnight show, a woman called me when a record was on, and she said, I'm really depressed. I'm going to kill myself. And I talked to her a little bit, and I said, well, look, let's talk about this tomorrow morning. And she gave me a phone number, and I called the next day. Now, I have no idea whether she killed herself after that, but I know I got her through that night.
Well, that is – I did that with my uncle. I got him through 8 years by intervening, and he died at 92 of a heart problem. It was one of the most satisfying events of my life. I urge anyone who hears someone say, gee, my niece is in the bathroom crying every morning, to do something about it.
In working on this book, did you discover things about the family you didn't know?
Well, the biggest thing I discovered that I had heard when I was 16 and didn't take it in was that my mother had exhibited some of the terrible symptoms of bipolar disorder at a very early age. And those symptoms were sexual proclivities before the time that one should exhibit such proclivities. I don't mean petting or dating a boy in school. She had some kind of an affair with the headmaster of her school when he was in his 30s. Now, I said this the other day. And
well, it's just probably as much his or more responsibility
his
than hers.
Absolutely. But someone called in on that particular show that I was on and said to me, how can you call that an affair? That was child molestation. And that caller was right. Mm-hmm. But this relationship, whatever it was, did blossom. And he had 3 children and a wife. And it went, in some regard, right up to her marriage with my father. And I discovered that through her writings and her letters. And that was an extraordinary experience for me. I felt like a voyeur, and I also felt like I had something here that could never be erased.
On the other hand, the fact that she wrote so much would give you some clue as to why you and your brother became writers, don't you think?
Mother was an extraordinary writer. At the age of 13, she wrote from a camp where most 13-year-olds, dear mom and dad, I don't like it here, goodbye. She wrote these long letters to her father, which were full of lovely phrases. And I remember growing up asking my uncle, her brother, whether she was very bright, because my grandmother was quite stupid, or at least concrete. And he said, no, she wasn't especially bright. I think she was very bright, and the disease got in the way.
You produced a PBS program called Whose Death Is It Anyway? About end-of-life decision-making, which is the other side of this coin, isn't it?
Yeah, the first show I ever produced for public television was at Channel 13 back in 1963 called The Right to Die, and it was based on a book by Lael Tucker Wurtenbaker, who wrote about helping her husband, who had terminal cancer, to die. And it was a very interesting, if delving into this subject.
Still, you had to ask yourself why this was so interesting to you and why you were doing this sort of thing long before you ever thought about this tradition of suicide in your own family.
Yeah. I didn't ask that later, but I should have.
How much input do you think family members should have about end-of-life choices?
Well, my kids have my power of attorney. But the other day,
my mother told me that she would not give me that because she was sure that I wouldn't obey her desire and have her put out or whatever.
My wife did not give me the power because she thought I would chicken out too. So she gave it to my lawyer daughter, who would not chicken out. And when my wife was on life support in April, I left it to the two girls, 37 and 40, two young women, to make that decision. They made it instantly.
Christopher Lucas's book, Blue Jeans, A Memoir of Loss and Survival, is published by Doubleday. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
I am glad I was here.